The Civil War killed almost as many soldiers as the combined total of all the other wars this country has fought. The odds of dying in battle were pretty high, and the soldiers knew it. So what enabled them to fight and overcome the instinct of self-preservation? James McPherson tries to answer that question in his new book, For Cause and Comrades. He's the author of 11 books on the Civil War, including the Pulitzer Prize-winning Battle Cry of Freedom. McPherson's new book, about why men fought in the Civil War, is based on letters written by soldiers. He learned that many men didn't fight, they hid out during battles. But he also learned that many of the men who did fight were deeply motivated by their cause and their sense of honor. I asked McPherson to read one of the letters in his book.
This is the last letter I quote in the book, so it's the concluding letter. And this comes from a carpenter from Ohio who had risen from the ranks to become a captain by 1864 in the 47th Ohio, had a lot of combat experience. And on the third anniversary of his initial enlistment, and he had re-enlisted, fought through the rest of the war, he wrote to his young son, his 10-year-old son, congratulating him on a neatly written letter that he had gotten from his son. And here's what he said to his son. "It tells me that while I'm absent from home, fighting the battles of our country, trying to restore law and order to our once peaceful and prosperous nation, and endeavoring to secure for each and every American citizen of every race the rights guaranteed to us in the Declaration of Independence, I have children growing up that will be worthy of the rights that I trust will be left for them."
One of the questions you had while writing this book is, why did men volunteer to go into battle when the battles in the Civil War were just insane? It was just a rain of bullets. I mean, you were just so likely to get killed, and the mortality rate was, what, higher in the Civil War than all the other wars combined that America fought?
Well, nearly as many...
For American casualties, anyway.
Nearly as many soldiers died in the Civil War as American soldiers who have died in all of the rest of the wars this country has fought combined.
So when men were signing up, were they talking mostly about duty and honor or about ending slavery or preserving slavery or reuniting the country or separating from the country, the more specific goals of the war?
Most soldiers on either side at first made very little reference to the slavery question. Most of them focused on the issue of patriotism, of fighting for what they defined as their country. In the case of Confederate soldiers, they were fighting for a nation that had been newly created by the establishment of the Confederate States of America. Yet I think when it was established, it came in with as much reservoir of patriotic feeling on the part of the Southern people as a more long-established country like the United States. So they were fighting for the independence of the Confederate nation, so they said they were fighting for their country. Northerners said they were fighting to preserve their country from the ruin that secession would accomplish, that is, the United States would no longer be the United States. It would be the disunited states. There would no longer be one nation indivisible if secession were to be successfully established. It would constitute a fatal precedent because other states or regions would call upon that precedent to secede in the future.
Not all the men who fought in the Civil War actually showed up for the battles that they were supposed to. You write about how some of the men would skulk in the language of the day. What would they do to avoid being in the battle?
Well, there were a variety of things that that men would do to avoid going into the battle. One of the most common was to pretend to be sick, to go to the regimental surgeon and to make some kind of a complaint, or as they were approaching the battlefield to fall out of line and pretend to have a cramp in the stomach or to be deathly sick. And in fact, that happened so often that it became that when men were genuinely sick, they sometimes, if they did not want to suffer shame and dishonor in the eyes of their fellows, they would actually go into a battle when they were genuinely sick. Another way of getting out of it was to seek some kind of a rear area job, to become a quartermaster sergeant, to become a teamster, to try to get a job as a headquarters clerk. Any number of rear area jobs, which in the Civil War were called bomb-proof jobs.
Well, what about discipline? I mean, it's hard to imagine that like half the men weren't really doing Doing their best to actually fight the battle?
Well, part of the problem in Civil War regiments was that discipline was quite lax.
Mm-hmm.
These were mostly volunteer regiments. They were citizen soldiers who had gone into the army early in the war for whatever reason. Some of it may have been peer pressure. Some of it may have been sort of a naive, youthful quest for glory and adventure. Or it may have been a serious commitment and belief in the cause for which they were fighting. The officers, too, were, for the most part, non-professionals. They were lawyers, businessmen, farmers, men from civilian life. They didn't have much military experience or, indeed, in many cases, any military experience at all before. This was the most individualistic and democratic society in the world in the 19th century. The sense of discipline, obedience, subordination to superiors, it just didn't exist in American society, and so it was very difficult to create in the American armies, Union or Confederate, of the Civil War, the kind of discipline, the savage discipline, that existed in the British regulars, for example, or in the Prussian army of Frederick the Great, or in the French or German armies of the 19th century. And so the men who did the real fighting were those who had an internal motivation to do so, for the most part, rather than an external coercion to do so. Good outfits, good units, good regiments learned from bitter experience on the battlefield that discipline was necessary or they were going to get cut to pieces. They were not going to be good soldiers. So as the war went on, there was a kind of do-it-yourself learning process that made the soldiers, the good soldiers, after the poor ones were in one way or another weeded out, much more amenable to discipline because they knew the importance of discipline on the battlefield, of quick obedience to an order, you can't stand around and have a debating society about whether you're going to do something or not when you're on the battlefield.
I think one of the motivating questions behind your book is, why did men volunteer to fight in the Civil War, knowing what the odds were, knowing that odds were pretty good, they wouldn't live. And there's, a story in your family tree that inspires the same question. You had a great-great-grandfather, I believe, who emigrated from England in 1857, and just 5 years later, at age 37, enlisted in the Civil War. He had 8 children. Do you have any clue why he enlisted, especially being so new to the country?
Well, regrettably, I don't have any letters or diaries from him. I wish I did, and I've searched for them, but I don't think they exist. The only clue I have to that, or I actually have 2 clues. One clue is the family obituary, which said that he was grateful to his adopted country, the United States, for the opportunity and the prosperity that it had provided him, and he felt a sense of duty, of reciprocal obligation to fight for that country, which had provided opportunity for him and for his family. Another clue is that he named his first child, born after he had settled in the United States, Henry Ward Beecher. His last name was Beecher. His name was Jesse Beecher. And Henry Ward Beecher was the most famous clergyman and orator and a very prominent anti-slavery leader. And clearly, my great-great-grandfather felt that, in part at least, this was a war to end the curse, the sin of slavery.
Now, you had another ancestor who was a white officer in an African-American regiment in the Civil War. What do you know about that ancestor?
Well, I know more about him because there are some diaries. He was a 19-year-old printer in upstate New York when the war broke out, and he enlisted first in the New York regiment, I think because of the motives of everybody else who was enlisting. The country was in danger. The rest of the men that he knew were going. So he enlisted. When the Union Army began to recruit black troops in 1863, they were searching for experienced and competent white officers to lead them because the assumption was that the officers would have to be white. My great-grandfather, Luther Osborne, took the exam to become an officer in what was then called a colored regiment, the U.S. Colored Troops, and he passed the exam and became a lieutenant, eventually a captain, in the 22nd U.S. Colored Troops. And I think he did so because he believed that this war was to end slavery and to give the United States what Lincoln called at Gettysburg a new birth of freedom. And one of the best ways to ensure that the war resulted in the abolition of slavery was to get black troops fighting for their own freedom, proving their manhood. That was a very common theme in black regiments. They needed to fight in order to prove their manhood, and if they proved their manhood, they would prove that they and their entire race deserved freedom. They had earned freedom. And I think my great-grandfather believed in that, and that's why he volunteered to become an officer in a black regiment.
I'm wondering if you found evidence, too, of how white Confederate troops treated black soldiers during the Civil War.
Yes, I have found that, and it's one of the great tragedies and I think in some ways disgraces of the Civil War. The Confederate government refused to recognize black regiments that contained former slaves as whom they continued to regard as their slaves, as legally slaves, as legitimate soldiers. And when they captured them, they sometimes executed them, sometimes massacred them on the spot, refused to take black prisoners, and sometimes treated their white officers in the same way. More often, would refuse to exchange black POWs. There was an exchange cartel in place, and would return these men to slavery. And one of the reasons for the breakdown in the exchange cartel in the latter half of the war, from late 1863 onward, was this Confederate refusal to exchange black POWs. And that led to the tragedy of overcrowded prisons in 1864 and 65, and the large number of deaths in places like Andersonville, Elmira, New York, and so on.
Why have you devoted your career to the Civil War?
Well, it was the single most shaping and important and defining experience in American history. The Revolution, of course, gave birth to the United States, but it was the Civil War that ensured the United States would survive as one nation and define what kind of a nation it would be, and ended the institution slavery, which had proved so divisive, so polarizing, so threatening to the existence of the United States, as well as being a violation of the principles of freedom on which the country was founded, that I think the Civil War must be understood if we are to understand what kind of a country we are today.
James McPherson, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
James McPherson's new book is called For Cause and Comrades, Why Men Fought in the Civil War. He's a professor of American history at Princeton.